I am looking forward this morning to continuing on in our do-it-yourself series, but I wanted to let you know ahead of time that Reggie is available to help out with any of your decorating needs. So just talk to Tanya about that. She'll get him hooked right up. Well, as we pull out some tools and talk about being single in the midst of our community here at Crossroads, can I ask you all to start out with me in prayer? Lord, thanks so much for today and the opportunity to just learn together and grow together. And help us to hear the pieces that you want us to hear today, Lord. And also help me to say the things that you specifically want us to learn. And we just thank you for the opportunity to be together and to have this time with you. In your son's name we pray. Amen. Well, you all may be wondering how in the world I ended up here doing this, and it's something that all of my friends have been asking me lately. My job here at Crossroads is I'm Director of Leadership Development, and what that means is that I work with all of the directors of the ministries here at Crossroads to help them put together kind of the vision and then the right objectives and goals to accomplish that vision. Then they get to work with all of you, and I love my job because it's really behind the scenes, and I like it that way. The other role that I have here at Crossroads is that I'm part of our management team, and on that team, I get to represent, you know, a little bit of diversity, being the single chick, and I also am behind the scenes with that job, and I like it that way. And what I tell Brian and Brian is that once a year, if needed, I will do a message. And that's only if needed. And this year, as we were rolling into November, I thought I was free and clear. And I'm sneaking out of here one night on a Saturday night, and Brian Tom stops me, and he says, "Cindy, you're up." And I knew immediately what it was he was saying to me. And I just kind of stood there with this, you know, okay, I'll do it if I have to. And just kind of as an afterthought said, "Now, what is it that I'm going to be speaking on?" And he said, "Well, the message is on being single." And I kind of stood there and went, "You are a dog. You're just a dog. I don't believe you're doing this to me." And he said, "You know, we're going to make it easy for you. We know how busy you are, and we want to care for you. And so Brian Wells and I are actually going to kind of do all the research and all the study." I mean, these guys, you all spend like anywhere from 15 to 20 hours a week putting together messages. And he said, "So we're going to do everything for you, and we're going to kind of ghostwrite this message for you." And I have to tell you that it was at that moment that I realized that I had become the token single chick on staff. But I wasn't complaining because that was fine. If I had to get up here and do this, that was fine. Let them do it. And I walked away, and all of a sudden I started thinking about it, and it just started cracking me up. I went back and started counting up things in their life and thought, you know, okay, these two guys are going to write the message for me. They have 23 years of marriage between the two of them, two wives, five kids, two mortgages, four cars, two of which are minivans that have Cheerios stuffed down in the seats. Two, I'm not spreading any new news because they surely have shared it with us. Two vasectomies between the two of them. And unlike any of the single men in this room, they've changed at least four poopy diapers in their lifetime. And they're going to write the message for us. And I kind of had this visual in my head of, you know, the two of them sitting around in their dockers writing a message, trying to figure out, you know, what do we say to single people? Kind of the equivalent of the Golden Girls writing an episode of Jackass. So you all get me instead, my one a year. And, you know, actually, there was a good reason for it, because they know me well enough to know that I love being single. I get a kick out of it. I love sleeping in the middle of the bed, eating crackers in the bed, anything I want to do kind of on my own schedule. And I understand also around here that being single is such a critical factor for all of us in this community, because over half of the people coming to Crossroads are single. And many like me who are single again. And I want to just do kind of a stop here and give you all a little bit of information on, as I talk today, I'm going to talk about just how to be successfully single and how to enjoy that. But if you're in a situation where you're in a marriage that's hurting, I don't want to in any way glamorize being single again. Going through a divorce was by far the most painful experience of my entire lifetime. And if you're in a hurting marriage, let me just encourage you, call our office. We've got a list of incredible counselors that will help you. We've got a tape that you can ask for a copy of out at the Information Center that they'll send you, and that talks about what happens when love breaks down. And do everything you can to try to make that marriage work, because going through a divorce is not worth it. So all that being said and done, I do want to talk today about the whole concept of being successfully single. And one of the things that I've learned over time is that so many of us look at being single as kind of we're in the holding pattern. We're just in the lineup waiting for when our spouse is going to come along. And I think that's a real dangerous place for us to get into, because I don't think that being single is standing around and looking at kind of that holding pattern or I'm waiting towards marriage. I think being single is really about being in a pattern of growth. And it's moving towards this growth that fills your life up and makes you continue to be on this place of, I'm not in a holding pattern. I'm not waiting for a spouse as the role that I play as a single person. What I'm doing is I'm looking forward to just my life and the growth of my life. In the Bible, we look at why God sent Jesus Christ to come to the earth, and I think it spells it out really, real clearly in this scripture in John 10 in the New Testament. It says, I came that they may have life and have it to the full. And I love this because it doesn't say, I just came so people would have life, but it says that I came so they'd have it to the full. And, you know, we forget that sometimes. We wait till something good will happen tomorrow, and we wish away part the today of our life. I have a dear friend who recently gave me a book on prayer, and I've carried this saying around with me for the last week or so because I just was enthralled by it. And it's a guy named John Bailey, and he writes, I praise and worship thee, O Lord, for the great and mysterious opportunity of my life. And isn't that just awesome? The whole concept that each one of our lives are about this great and mysterious opportunity of our life, and that Jesus Christ came here so we'd have life to the full. And I'm not in a holding pattern. I'm not sitting around and I'm not looking for what is the next place for my life. You know, unfortunately, though, I do think that everything around us keeps saying to us that that's what it's about. That being single is, you know, you've got to find that partner, that one person in your life. I think we're really inundated with that message. In fact, we're going to take a look at a clip where there's two couples at two different phases in their relationships that are both dealing with the same thing. Okay, I would imagine that the guys in the room who are single are having a different reaction to that than some of the girls in the room. As a single person, that is a message that I think we're inundated with, that being married equals complete, therefore being single equals incomplete. And I'm here just to challenge us that being single has nothing to do with being incomplete. Jesus spent his entire life here on earth as a single person. And we've got to break that thought in our head that we're waiting for Mr. or Mrs. Right and that we're incomplete until we find that person, because it'll get us in trouble. My personal story is very much about that. In my mid to later 20s, I was a single person living in Charlotte, North Carolina, one of the prettiest and funnest areas of the country, in my opinion. And I had a group of friends, and I'm telling you, they were fun. They were all kind of in the same phase of life that I was in. We traveled, we played. It was an absolute blast, just one of kind of those golden times of your life. And slowly but surely, as things happened, people began to pair off and get married. And I'm here to tell you that I have bridesmaid dresses up into the double digits, and I don't wear them again. And the sure way to have any guy take off and run from me would be to do a trilogy of all of the wedding bridesmaid dresses that I've been in. It would take a trilogy because there are that many of them. And while I'm blessed and honored to have been a bridesmaid, it got old. It wore thin after a while. And what ended up happening is in our culture that we were in at the time, in our church, there was a group for singles, and then it almost felt like you got to graduate when you got married. So you got to move over into the young marrieds, and then when you decided to have kids, you got to graduate into the preparation for parenting group. And then finally, ooh, you really made it because you got into the young family group. And what happened is it took this group of us who had this incredible community together, and it just separated us. And to the point that I'd call somebody on Friday night and say, hey, let's go do something. And, you know, they'd say, oh, we're hanging out with such and such couple. And in my head, I'm hearing, we're hanging out with people who are demographically the same with us right now, and you aren't. You're incomplete, so have fun. Go find a new group of single people. And what happened is it started playing off these messages in my head of what's wrong with me? Why haven't I found mine? And, you know, I wanted kids. My first job out of high school was working in a daycare. I love kids. And I, you know, this biological crap was going on in my head. And it was tick, tick, ticking away. And all of a sudden, I began to kind of lower my standards to some degree, and I began to date guys that, you know, well, maybe they'll change. And what ended up happening is I ended up in a relationship that there was this message playing in my head the whole time, he'll change, he'll change, and got married, and he'll change, he'll change. And it had some devastating effects on my life. It led to a long period of depression, a lot of weight gain. It was a very hard, hard, hard season of my life. And it's a devastating thing because I was living out this lie of I was incomplete and I needed a person to complete me. And, you know, it leaves you in this settling kind of place of maybe my standards are too high. And so today we're really going to talk about being successfully single and the fact that when we talk about in this series do it yourself, it doesn't mean do it by yourself. It means that you have to have community around you. There's a need in all of us for that. But it doesn't mean that you have to find one person who's going to complete you, because no one person will ever complete you out. They might fill out pieces of you, and marriage is a wonderful thing, but it can be a trap for us to get stuck in this thing. So one of the things that I'd like to talk to us about today is the fact that we human beings, we need to operate in four spaces. I'm not talking about physical spaces. I'm talking about kind of mental, psychological, emotional spaces. And we see this in the Bible, and we also, in the 70s, there were a group of psychologists that really studied this, and one in particular named Gilchrist kind of came up with this image. We've put it in the space of a house under the theme of do-it-yourself. Isn't that cute? And because really, you know, without all of these filled up in our lives, then our house could tumble down. The spaces are the public, social, personal, and intimate. And I'm just going to challenge all of us, whether you're single or married today, that without filling out all of these spaces in your life, you will not have the opportunity to have this fullest being, you know, the mysteriousness of your life without filling out these. So let me get started on that. The first space that I really want to focus on is the public space. This one's the easiest. This is just when you're out somewhere where you don't know everybody. It's a sense of belonging for us as human beings because it makes us realize that, you know, we're just one of a mass of humanity. For me, it might be things like when I take an art class or a jewelry making class or when I'm at a play or a show or something. For you, it might be a football game. You know, if you're a senior pastor who's looking for his lost masculinity and broken places of his childhood, it might be a hardware store. And so you need to think through what your public space looks like. And it's just a necessity for us in life to know that, you know, we function in this public space. The second one is our social space. And the social space is one where you're in a group of people, and those people, you know some of them, but you don't know all of them. But there's a safety there of the comfort of people that you know and the safety of the opportunity of meeting some of those people in that space that you don't know. You know, we see these things, like I said, in Jesus' life. The public space, he was very much always teaching in a crowd. The social space for him, one of the ways we see it is in the wedding where he went to in Cana in, John 2. And it says, on the third day, a wedding took place at Cana in Galilee, and Jesus' mother was there, and Jesus and his disciples had also been invited to the wedding. So we see him functioning in this place where he goes with a tight-knit group of friends, but there are more people there. I'd like to lay out just a few things for us to think about how we operate and what we can practice when we're in social spaces. The first of which is authenticity. One of the things that I'm always a little bit stunned at when you're at a party and you're talking to someone is the game. What do you do? Who do you know? Where do you live? We get trapped in this, and I'd like to challenge us as a community today to not get trapped there, to practice authenticity, and to change your answer to some of those questions. It could be as simple as saying, you know, when somebody says, what do? You can say, you know what, I'm really wired that I love people, and so my job, what I do every day, is that I help people do such and such. You could say, you know what, as a young kid, I love numbers. And so what I've done career-wise is I've gone out and found jobs where I get to be involved kind of behind the scenes working with numbers. So that you don't play this game of dropping the place that you work and, you know, what kind of income level you're at. Just that simple place of practicing authenticity with people and being real with them about who you are. The second challenge is to really, in this space, practice boundary setting. One of the things that we find out is that how we operate in the public and the social and the personal space is then how we get to function in the intimate space. And we'll talk about the intimate space a little bit later, but that's really reserved for only God if you're single and God and a spouse if you're married. And so that intimate space, we learn how to operate there by functioning in these other spaces. So boundary setting for us would look something like how, you know, saying yes and no to different things, practicing what it is that your life is about and keeping those boundaries in place around that. For me, one of the ways that I challenged myself on this one is that being here at Crossroads, you guys are incredible people. I mean, there's not a week goes by that I don't come across somebody that I think, I want to be their friend. This is a cool person, and cool in terms of their life being full. But one of the things that I got trapped into was somebody would walk by and they'd say, Cindy, let's have lunch sometime. And I'd say, yeah, let's have lunch sometime. They'd walk by the next week. Are we going to have lunch? Sure, we're going to have lunch sometime. And in my head, I'm thinking the whole time, I don't have in the season of my life to have lunch right now. I've got, you know, I love my job and all these other things are going on. And as much as I would love to have lunch with this person, I don't have time. And so now the boundary that I practice, and it's not easy, but I work on it, is to say to somebody, you know what, I think you're an awesome person. And I would love nothing more than to have time to grab lunch and get to know you more. This season of my life, I am so in need of keeping some boundaries in place so that I practice the discipline of having some downtime and maybe another season. And please don't take that like I'm not interested in you, but I have to keep that boundary in place. And I would just challenge you all to think about your boundaries and what needs to happen in your life to keep that balance. The last thing here under the social space is what we call inclusivity. Hear me on this one, you guys. This is so important for a place like we're in, where we're growing all the time and we want to invite people in. Being inclusive is about being in a social situation where you don't just circle your wagons. You don't just, you know, stick only with the people at a social gathering that you know. This is a place where you just make it a priority that you're going to walk up to people and meet somebody new in every social situation that you're in. Every week when you come to church, whether you feel like it or not, you need to go reach out and just say hello, meet someone new, find out a little bit of information about them when you're here. We won't be able to be a healthy, functioning community. And as singles, your life won't be its fullest if you're not continually just welcoming people into that social space and enjoying who they are. The social space really does help us to be prepared for a more personal space with people. The goal isn't to move people through these spaces. The goal is to be healthy and happy in each one of them. But I think what I really want to spend some time on today is the personal space, because it's in the personal space that we really learn how to be intimate with one another. The personal space is reserved for those, you know, that limited number of family and friends that you talk to on a regular basis, you spend time with almost weekly or every other week. This is the space that you really do learn how to be intimate with people. It's a very important space for all of us to learn how to function in. And it's one that, as we grow in this space, then we get to go deeper and deeper in friendships with people. We see how Jesus did this in the book of Mark. And he says, they went to a place called Gethsemane, and Jesus said to his disciples, sit here while I pray. And he took Peter, James, and John along with him. And, you know, we see this in how Jesus led his life, and we see it in all of us and how we live our lives. Now, the danger here is that in this personal space, we don't spend enough time in it before we move to the intimate space in a dating relationship. Dating relationships should only be functioning in the personal space, because we need to spend plenty of time getting to know a person before we ever consider marriage with that person. And one of the things that I think that we see around here often is that people go flying through this personal space and jump into the dating space. And while I'm not going to talk at length today about dating, I do want to offer up a couple of resources for you all to grab. If you're single and dating, a must-have on your bookshelf and in your head is this book Cloud and Townsend did on boundaries and dating. Awesome book. Need to read it. It's excellent. The other thing that I'd offer up to you is that back when we did a series called The Clue Phone is Ringing, we had one in that was about dating, and the people out at the Information Center would be glad to offer that as a resource to you. If we don't spend enough time in this social space, I mean in this personal space before we marry, we will end up in this thing of not knowing a person well enough to know that we want to commit our lives to them, and that's a dangerous place to be in. What I'd like to do today is really give us kind of three tips for surviving in this personal space. And I think it's very important. The first one really is how to move into this space. And what we need to be able to do is be able to find people that we move closer into our hearts. And an easy way of doing that is laid out in a book called The Friendship Factor by a man named Stephen Johnson. And the first process of that, he says, is just reach out to people. It's as simple as walking out of here today and saying, "Hi, I'm kind of new here, and would you like to get together and go grab a cup of coffee or a bite of lunch real quick?" You know, just to get to know one another. You can do this, you know, it can be across genders or it can be same gender. It doesn't matter, because our goal isn't to go find our spouse. Our goal is to make friends and choose very carefully who we let into our personal space. Now, what you need to be able to do, though, is gauge their reaction. And if their reaction is a little standoffish, then you know that may not be the right person for you to spend time with. I'll give you a hint. Overdisclosure in that first couple of meetings is not a good thing. If you walk up to somebody and go, "Look, I got a canker sore, and my feet hurt, and I have this horrible relationship with my mother, and would you like to have lunch with me?" The answer is probably going to be no. And you need to gauge their reaction and see if they kind of pull away a little bit. And if they do, that's fine. One of the things that we did around here was we decided to not continue doing a matching process to put people into our A teams, which are called small groups. And we had some flack from people back about that. And, you know, it kind of caught me off guard a little bit, because I thought, okay, wait a minute. Where else in our lives do we have people match us together with people that we're supposed to get close and personal and share our lives with? You know, the goal here would be to find people that you connect with. And if you're not practicing this thing of reaching out and including people, gauging their reaction, you know, that is human behavior. That's the smarter way for us to operate as a community. The other thing I hear from people often is, you know, is Crossroads very clicky? You know what? We're not. It just doesn't happen in our community, because we don't segment people off, and we encourage people all the time, get out there and meet people, come to the social events that we have. We're a very inclusive community around here, and that's why I think we have so many singles, because it is a safe place for singles to come and enjoy themselves. Well, noticing their reaction, then moving forward, stepping back based on that reaction, it'll help you be able to move people more into that personal space and grow in a friendship. And that's just such a fun thing to do. The second challenge for us when we're operating in this personal space is to really be able to learn how to think in the space. I think that our attitude, as it's related to being single, is vital. If we're running around and we're thinking to ourselves, you know, "I hate being single. This is miserable. Get me out of here." Well, you're not going to be all that attractive to build friendships with somebody. You know, we need full lives. Thinking in this space in terms of what is the fullness of my life, it is vital. Do you have hobbies? How are your friendships? Are you learning something? Are you growing? Are you studying? And, you know, for me, this is where I know that I'm a successful single. I don't do everything right, but this is one of them because I have this 107-year-old house that I've been rehabbing. I invite everybody over to come and strip wallpaper. I have friends. I have a pet. I love to read. I don't have enough time in my life. In fact, earlier this year, I had a guy kind of pop up on the scenes, and I knew he was interested in me, and I just kept thinking, leave me alone. I don't want you to show interest in me. I even went so far as I began to interview all of his friends to try to find a reason why I shouldn't spend time with him. And to be totally honest about how neurotic I was, I actually called his counselor to figure out if he was sane so that I could figure out a good reason to not go out with him. And unfortunately, he was living a very successful life, and he's an awesome guy. But I had to go through a grieving process. I literally had to grieve leaving my single life in order to be in a dating relationship. And that's a challenge that I would put out to all of you who are single. If you don't feel like you're grieving leaving your single life, then you don't need to be dating. I'll say it just that boldly. Because if you're not being successful in the single process, you're not going to be successful in the dating and marriage process. Because one person will not step in and fill out your life and complete you. And, you know, one of the things that this really reminded me as I was thinking through it, I spent 10 years floating around different jobs at Procter & Gamble. And the last, you know, we all in our career, we have ups and downs as it goes. Well, the last about 3 years that I was there, I mean, it was just fun. I was in roles that I loved, and I was, you know, won award. I mean, just all that kind of stuff. And then when it came up on the radar screen to leave there and to go into ministry here at Crossroads, you know, I'm thinking, wait a minute, I've had these great years in my career, and I'm going to go be a pastor? I don't know about that. But I look back on it now, and I'm so sure that I made the right decision because I was playing from a position of strength. I wasn't down in my career, and being down in my career, I was jumping to something. I was at this position of strength where I could really look at and evaluate moving over here into becoming a pastor. And you know what? I look back on that, and I'm so thankful, and I think it's the challenge for us in dating. Are you at a place where you're so happy being single that you can really evaluate whether or not this is a good person for you to date? It's not about sitting around and waiting for somebody to ask you out. You want to find the right person that helps fill out your life and bring it to a place that you're enjoying it more. Well, the third challenge in this space, one is to how to move people into it. The second is how to think and have a great attitude. The third one is how do we act in this space? We've got to learn in this space that how is it that you live in a single life to make it feel like you are very complete in who you are as a single person? And I'll challenge all of us that if we don't have relationships that are multi-generational, then we're missing the boat. And what I mean by that is if we sit around and all we do every weekend is hang out with single people, we've missed the whole ball game. And in fact, I'll even challenge you all that if you're married with kids and you don't have a couple of single people who have keys to your back door and access to your refrigerator on a regular basis, who also build into your kids and are free babysitters occasionally, you're missing the boat. Because this is a place for us to really fill up our lives. The wisdom of the older generation, I'll tell you, Gil and Joanne Hopkins that you hear us talking about, we just Friday night celebrated their 50th wedding anniversary. That was a picture from the party. They fill up my life. The last few years, going through some tough times, I knew that no matter what, I had a place where I could go pop on their doorstep, even if it was after their bedtime at 10 o'clock, and they would take me in, and that just felt good. I needed kind of an anchoring place to go in some of the turmoil that the course of my life had taken. Another thing is, I hear all the time from people, I want kids. Oh, I want kids. You don't understand how badly I want kids. You know what? I do understand. I went through a season of my life right before the divorce and afterwards where I could not go to a baby shower. It just wrenched my heart because I'd always wanted my own kids. And all of a sudden, this light bulb went off in my head of, I want kids. I have kids. They don't have to be my own biological kids. If any of you in this room don't have close friendships with kids, you are missing the joy of life, period. Because kids fill up your life in a way that you would never be able to live your life out otherwise. These are my friends, Lena and Amanda, and we're in Chicago. We actually kidnapped them for a birthday party and went to the America Girl doll store. And I call it going to America Girl doll hell, because when I grew up, we had stakes and tree houses, and we ripped the heads off dolls. And going to this place where I actually had tea, where the dolls sit in chairs at the table with us, was just an expansion of my life. And I have hives even now thinking about it. But you know what? I'd do it all over again in a heartbeat. We drive. They didn't know where we were going. We had blankets over their head. We drove into Chicago, took the blankets off, and I'm telling you, the excitement that they had was just incredible. Wouldn't change it for anything. Kids fill up my life. You know, this is something that I take so seriously that we play it out in my entire household. In fact, this is an example of that. My Max is the one that looks like me over there. He is blonde. I am not. Well, I get a little help. And that's his best friend, Chester. And if you say Chester at my house, he goes ballistic. And so even the animals know what I'm talking about when it comes to personal space. He's my honey. But seriously, these are spaces that we've got to make sure that we manage. And the personal space one is just so important. Well, the last space that I'm going to touch on is this one called intimate space. And the intimate space, as I said earlier, if you're single, is reserved for God. If you're married, it's for God and your spouse. Now, let me just be honest with you all. I just finished talking about personal space. One thing I know for a fact is that two people who are unhappy single people will not make a happy married couple, period. In fact, one of the things that I'm just amazed at around here at Crossroads is how many conversations I have with people where it's the single person talking about how much they want to be married and the married person talking about how much they want to be single. And it breaks my heart. In fact, if you're having problems in your marriage, let me just encourage you to back up and enjoy the friendship in your marriage so that it builds on the fullness of that intimate relationship. Also, I would challenge you that if you're in a dating relationship and you are experiencing an intimate sexual relationship with the person that you're seeing, back out of that. Go back to just being personal in the personal space and being friends. It will fill out and enrich your married life once you get married like you wouldn't believe. And don't fall in the trap, please, of thinking that you'll get your needs met intimately by being in a sexual relationship outside of marriage, because it does not work that way. You will miss out on the depth of who that person is and the stages in a relationship because of that. And so I just really want to challenge you on that one. You know, we get trapped in this place, whether we're single or married, of looking for the next thing. And it's this constant, I want the next thing, I want the next thing, I want the next car, I want the next whatever. And that will never fill up our lives. We're all looking for this question called, who am I and what's the answer to it? And, you know, I can tell you who you are. Psalm 139 talks about the fact that, for you created my inmost being, you knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I'm perfectly and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. And think about this. You know who you are? You're perfectly and wonderfully made. Your life is complete in just who you are because you have the ability that you will never be alone. By having relationship with God through his son, Jesus Christ, there is no aloneness. Your who am I question is fully answered. God is enough for us. And in fact, right now, I invite you just to sit back and really let the words of this song kind of sink into you as we listen to how God truly is enough for us.